Welcome to episode 3 of Watch Out, a movie podcast.
Hey.
It is episode 3, yeah. So today we're going to, we're going to review The King, the latest Netflix original movie that seems to be completely hidden by the Netflix algorithm and nobody has seen.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know anything about this movie going in. Like, for some reason, all I thought was it was going to be Robert Pattinson and Timothée Chalamet, essentially as two nobles who had to face each other for some reason.
It's close.
Yeah, but not really. I mean, vaguely, yeah. But, so The King came out probably a couple weeks ago. We're a little bit behind on this one.
I think about a month ago.
Stage. It is the latest movie from director David Michaud, who is an Australian director.
Yeah, mate. Kind of cool.
Yeah, he's one of us. Whose last movie that I saw was Animal Kingdom.
Animal Farm.
Animal Farm.
I think it's a different movie.
And have you seen Animal Kingdom?
No. You know what? The last time I saw this director's movies had to be The Rover.
I did not watch that. I remember when it came out, I'm seeing ads for it everywhere, but then just nothing. For some reason, nothing compelled me to watch it at all. I'm sure it's fine.
It's pretty good. I can't remember much other than Robert Pattinson's performance, but
maybe this guy's movies just have that air of like nobody actually wants to watch them, but they're pretty good. Like that seems to be because
I even feel like that's Australian cinema in a nutshell.
You know, yeah, good point.
Anyway, The King.
The King, yeah. So The King follows Timothée Chalamet, who is
Henry V.
I was trying to remember the numbers. One of the Henrys, Henry V. And the story essentially follows him as he is kind of thrust into being the king after the death of Henry IV.
Yeah.
And
the king.
The actual king. Yeah. And so he becomes the king. And pretty much very quickly finds himself dealing with the significance of his position and trying to be a good king and pretty much just the moral and ethical dilemmas that come with being a king, especially when France starts egging them on and
France taunting them like
stuck and taunty. Yeah.
Yeah, just like in Monty Python. It's like the exact same scene.
It pretty much is actually. But yeah.
I fought in your general direction.
That scene pretty much is in the movie.
Yeah, look.
The first Robert Pattinson scene is that.
It really is. We'll get into that very much.
Yeah. So that's pretty much all I can really say without getting to spoilers. It is based on... I didn't realize this going in, but it's actually based on a collection of Shakespeare plays. So it's an actual Shakespeare movie.
Kinda. I think it's this weird thing, and like, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on either Shakespeare or history, but from my limited research, it is inspired by both the Shakespeare play and history, and the Shakespeare play being inspired by history, but very, you know, dramatized.
Yeah.
Which is like another layer for the movie to be based on. That dramatization, again, being a dramatized movie. So, like, if you're looking for historical accuracy in this movie, don't. You'll be sorely mistaken to expect that. But I don't think that should take away from the movie too much.
Oh, okay, I was wondering how historically accurate this was, because, like, I'm not the most apt at historical things. Like, I don't know the most about it. My brother is an actual historian, so he probably would tear the shit out of this movie. But
interesting.
But I thought I really enjoyed it. I think it did a good job at kind of finding that balance between like historical period piece and like Shakespearean drama. I think it actually hit a good chord where I found a lot of Shakespeare stuff is like really weird and like there's a lot of faffing around and a lot of like the pacing is always really strange in everything by Shakespeare I've read.
Yeah, it's interesting because like I'm not a big Shakespeare guy.
Mm.
Just a personal preference. I know it's like technically good, but I don't know. I've never liked many of the adaptions. I've never seen a play because it's not my scene. Mm. You know.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is probably the one I've enjoyed the most, but
I'll its adaptation.
It, like, I don't know how much of an adaptation it is, honestly, because it seems like it's a pretty loose. I wouldn't even call it an adaptation at this point. I think it's just like inspired by some of the things they've added to history in that version.
Yeah. I find like a lot of historical dramas kind of are boring and there's no like style to them.
Yeah.
Where this one did really well. This one hit a chord, but again, I can't recommend it for everyone. It's a very slow, steady movie. Even though I think it's very well paced.
Yes.
It's still very slow and it's very long. And it really takes its time to tell the story that it tells. And that is very much a David Michaud thing because Animal Kingdom, I mean, I've only seen Animal Kingdom, so I shouldn't be saying it's a trademark of him, but this movie is actually very similar to Animal Kingdom, like narrative-wise, because Animal Kingdom is like a very similar story, but it's about a kid who's like the heir to a crime family in like suburban gangland Melbourne. And
that's a bit of a stretch from 15th century England.
Yeah, but it's like the same kind of drama of like.
Yeah, sure.
But Animal Kingdom is more about like. Like, he never actually, it's like before, like, it's, this is the future, it's like his future is ahead of him and he needs to decide what he's going to do, where this is very much like, he's in the spot, he's the most important person, he's the King of England, he has to think about everything he does and what, like, that, how that reflects on his people and his opposition and his council and stuff like that. So, it's all about that kind of drama. But there is, I remember coming out of Animal Kingdom and thinking it was pretty good. The story and the characters were all really good and the acting was all really strong, which goes for this movie as well. But in Animal Kingdom, there were so many scenes where the main character would just like stare off blankly into space, like vacantly, like thinking about stuff, thinking about like emotions and like what he's going to do. And there's just so many scenes of them just quietly staring at a wall or off into the distance. And that was also in this movie, but in a much more, like, restrained level and a much more effective way because the character actually had, like, much more significance in their position.
I think, look, this is a long movie and, like, it would be hard to recommend for, you know, everyone. But I feel like every scene has a lot in it.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in terms of motivation and narrative changes and like allegiances and information. It's not Game of Thrones. It's not like that packed. But it is, it's got enough in each scene that's like interesting and engaging. I didn't feel the length of this one. It sits at like 2.5 hours, but I didn't really feel the length. I was thoroughly engaged. Yeah, like you said, all the performances are really good. The character is really interesting, Henry. You know, he starts as like a lovable, maybe too overpowered, wise before his age sort of person, where he's like, you know, make peace, not war, and he's this lovable scamp that gets very drunk. He has like a rock star haircut and then he becomes the king and gets the ugliest haircut ever.
Yeah, he gets the bowl cut. they did a good job of setting him up as a character as being Because as when the story begins, he's like an outsider. He's kind of left the royal family behind him, like, and nobody seems to, like, they all seem to get it that he doesn't want anything to do with it. They don't want anything to do with him. And it just kind of puts him in that position of, like, he doesn't want to deal with any of the bullshit that his dad's set up, that his brother wants to do. Like, he hates this world and he wants nothing to do with it. And he gets reluctantly forced into it when things go sour. And he tries to bring that mentality to his position to try and, like, end this, like, all these petty feuds and, like, not just jump into any, like, bullshit wars or anything. And I think that really made him a sympathetic character, because I feel like so many narratives about, like, kings and royalties and stuff, and it's like, oh my god, this poor rich child has to become the most powerful man in the world, and he just wants to hang out with his friends, and this is really not that, and does a good job of showing the torment and, like, the turmoil he faces accepting that responsibility.
He still wants to hang around with his old drinking buddy, John Falstaff.
Oh, he was so good. Joel Edgerton is just... he just has this gift where he will always steal the show in any movie he's in. He'll just be the most likable character. There's just something about him. He's like a big teddy bear.
Do you think it's enhanced that the fact that he, like, co-wrote this?
Probably, but it's in every movie.
I want to be the best character.
He's always the best character.
Also,
Animal Kingdom as well, same thing. He was the best character. He was the cool uncle who was genuinely nice and was like, this kid should go live his own life and stuff. And was like, oh man, this guy's cool.
This guy's cool. So he's cool uncle in this one essentially as well.
Yeah, as well. That's his role in Hollywood,
like,
I think.
Crusader uncle.
Yeah. His character is so... I just liked him a lot.
So here's the interesting thing. Out of most of the characters are based on historical people, he is the one that is it. He's the like OC character for the king.
Of course. That's funny. So, he's the guy who's who's Mr. Perfect.
Yeah.
Knows
exactly
what to do.
I think he's a combination of potential different historical people, like, inspired by, but he himself is not a real person.
Okay. That usually happens with a lot of historical...
I don't think it might. I think it's important to say that, like, I think historical accuracy is important to an extent. It depends what movie, like, it's, you know, to and fro, and, like, liberties are always going to happen to make the story better. Yeah. I think... personally, the further the way the history is, the more liberties you can take. Because we're talking about 15th century. You know, like, it's not all super recorded.
Yeah, it's all very fast and loose. I think it's been such a long time. And it hit me as I was watching it. It's been so long since I've seen just a true blue... medieval period piece, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, no weird fantasy twists, no, like, magic or, like, anime or anything. Just, honest to God, like, Shakespeare, knights and kings and just some fellas getting into trouble. That kind of stuff. But...
I think the medieval battles is, like, the best part of it, the best draw.
Yeah, the battles, they really held onto their cards with the battles, and they used them really well. Because there's only like two in the whole movie, but they're both done very effectively. And
Yes. I think two full-scale battles, or at least on the field, and even then. But, like, it's rare to see medieval movies, period. Like, it's not a common genre. We haven't had, like, a big boom of them since, like, the sword and sandals eras of the 80s. And even then, they're, like, super freaking goofy and, like, Conan the Barbarian sort of shit.
Yeah.
We just don't have medieval movies. I thought Game of Thrones would maybe, you know, start a bit of a trend, and it seems like it's...
it seems like it's lent
sort
more
of
into,
happening.
Seems like it's lent more into the fantasy... kind of subgenre rather than the medieval period piece kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, at least it's happening a little bit.
Yeah, I've missed.
How many good medieval movies can you name off the top of your head?
Shit, I'm gonna Google this. Just medieval movies. Oh man, what? A Knight's Tale.
See, I haven't seen that. That doesn't.
That's a goofy movie. That's a.
Yeah.
That's such a 2000s movie.
See, like, all I know about that one is that it plays like pop rock music.
Yeah, it's hammy as hell. Oh, here's a good one. Army of Darkness.
Does that count?
Okay, I'm not going to count that. I feel like Sean Connery was in a lot of them. I remember watching The Name of the Rose. I have very little memory of that.
Okay.
1986 had young Christian Slater in it. It might have been his first movie or something. One of the, like, he was a baby in it.
Right.
Haven't seen The Seventh Seal. Apparently, no. Kingdom of Heaven's good. Season of the Witch is not good with Nicolas Cage. That's not a good movie. Oh God, what are these movies?
See, there's no like definitive medieval movie. I mean,
they're all so like 6 out of 10.
Yeah. exactly. Oh, that has. I think this might be my favorite medieval movie that has no fantasy elements because it has barely any competition.
Yeah, honestly. You're right. The other Henry V movie, that one, Robin Hood. Anything Robin Hood or King Arthur related?
Yeah, but King Arthur is very fantasy normally.
Yeah, they've bumped it up. There's magic in there now. Actually, there always was. What am I saying?
Well, that's a bit of a confusing one historically.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so the battles in this are really cool because they're less stylized.
Yeah, than they're really
you would see in a like a video game or something like that.
Yeah.
It's very raw and like
it's very
unglamorous sometimes.
Yeah, every battle, particularly the big final battle, very much reminds me of the Battle of the Bastards from Game of Thrones. Like
yeah,
that's the kind of vibe that I think they went for, and that must have just been what real war was like back in those days. Just a bunch of fellas slamming together in a big field.
Yes.
Which is fucked.
Yeah, just like the opening like duel is like
so scrappy.
It's like scrappy and like unglamorous and
yeah.
It's not cool.
Yeah. That was a really good touch.
Really good, and like it's having that early in the movie, you're like, "Oh shit, this is like the real deal. They're very ambitious in this way."
Yes.
Unlike we haven't seen something like that. Like even Game of Thrones, like their battles are pretty cool most of the time.
They still
lean towards like the swordsman looking cool and
yeah, especially towards the end.
Yes, yes, they still do have like that scrappy element, but not at the level this has. This feels much more grounded.
Yes, this whole movie is very grounded, very like authentic kind of.
Yeah,
period piece kind of
even though it's playing loose with history and loose with like historical fashion and armors and stuff, in terms of just like the feel and like the mechanics of it, I feel like this is a lot more ambitious than what we've seen otherwise.
Yeah. I guess we'll just before we go into spoilers, we'll just kind of wrap up our consensus.
Yes.
So pretty much, I liked it. I had a good time watching it. I thought it was very well directed. Like the whole package, like I really don't have any criticisms with it besides the fact that it's long, but that's not really a good criticism. It's just more of a warning for people like that could be off-put by that. It's not a movie for everyone.
If you're really into it, it's long, but it's on Netflix. So if you're one of those people that can, you want to pause in the middle, take a little break.
Yeah. It's really, if you're a fan of these kind of period, like medieval aesthetics or Shakespeare, even Timothy Chalamet or Joel Edgerton, then you'll enjoy this. Like it's worth it. I think the director, David Michaud, did a really good job at making like this big dramatic story feel so small.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it's really good.
Small like, and grounded.
Yeah, not small. Small as in like personal and grounded, and you really feel the dilemma going through the protagonist's head. And just Timothy Chalamet is really, I actually haven't seen that many of his movies, but he's going to be one of the big actors in the future. Like, he's shaping up.
I don't think I've followed his career very much at all, but I was pretty blown away by him being a leading man in this.
I realized watching this that I hadn't actually seen him as a leading man. I saw him as like a side character in Lady Bird, where he's kind of more of like a he's kind of more of a joke in that movie. But seeing him actually in like a dramatic serious leading role, like, I actually can't wait to see him in the Dune movie coming out.
Oh shit, he's in that?
He's Paul. He's the main character.
Yeah, that's sick.
He's
going to
be really good. And this movie, like, watching his performance in this is like the king. I was seeing, like, because I'm rereading the book at the moment, and I'm just like seeing so much of that, like, kind of thought processing and that kind of like playing off people, kind of like, I don't know. I can see it in his performance, how he's going to handle Paul in the Dune movie. And I think he'll be good. I think it's going to be good.
Nice.
So what did you think about the king? What did you think about the king?
I really liked the king. It's a strong recommendation for me. I recommend it to most people, I think. I think a lot of people will get a lot out of it. It is long. It is somewhat dry in parts, but I don't think that's a real bad thing. But I think it will turn off some people. But I think it's really good, and I think a lot of people should give it a shot. Mum, dad, everyone should, you know?
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
This is very much a dad movie, I think.
I reckon
anyone will enjoy it, but this is the kind of movie I could imagine walking in on, like, my dad watching. Like, that's the kind of movie.
Well, maybe if Netflix didn't bury it.
Yeah. Good old Netflix.
Because, like, I don't know about it. Because I was talking to Mitch before, and I was like, you should watch this movie, like, a couple of weeks ago. And he hadn't even heard of it because it's been buried by Netflix.
Yeah, I think I'd heard the name, but I had no idea it was out.
Also, pretty poor title, let's be honest.
The King. I mean, you couldn't really call it anything else unless you just called it Henry V or something.
Yeah.
But I think it must have been trying to separate itself from that. Intentionally.
Sure, or have a, like, a poetic name or something, but just the king makes it super hard to Google.
Oh yeah, it was hard to even just, I was looking up the Rotten Tomatoes score just now, and I could, it's like, couldn't find it.
The Lion King?
The Lion
Outlaw
King.
Outlaw King? Yeah, oh,
hey, The Lion King's a Shakespeare movie.
Oh.
That's,
do you think every King movie is secretly a Shakespeare movie?
Probably. I just haven't
including
read them,
including
so
King
I don't
Kong?
Know. Oh my god. The best Shakespeare play.
Oh, my favorite Shakespeare play is King Kong, but I can't wait till his magnum opus, Godzilla versus King Kong.
Oh my god. I forgot that movie exists.
Oh, it has existed and it will exist again.
It's coming out. It has a poster. It has a tagline. I don't have a good feeling about that one.
Actually,
but we'll get into that.
I invited a friend to watch it when I was about
to watch
it.
I meant the new one.
Like no. Sorry. I'm talking about the king. So I invited a friend to watch it with me, and he's like, is it related to the king's speech?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, kind of.
I guess technically.
A sort of a prequel.
It's the royal family cinematic universe.
Well, or just world history.
I remember watching a YouTube video, I think it was by Patrick Willem, and it was about unconventional, like, unplanned cinematic universes, like all these stories set around similar events that happened historically, which all star the same characters just played by different actors and, like, follow the same kind of events. There's like a NASA stumbling how to pronounce that word, cinematic universe. There's like a weird World War II cinematic universe, like all these movies that technically tie together.
Because they have shared characters.
They're all set, like stuff like that. And you could
that's
say
a good concept.
You could say the same thing about this and the English royal family cinematic universe being like the longest running film series. But
it's technically in the same canon as like W.E. by Madonna.
sure. But on a similar note, it's funny that you said that because I've had a lot of people explain to me that the Crown Netflix series is kind of like a sequel to The King's Speech because it follows on. Like, I'm pretty sure it, like, I heard it, like, starts with the death of the protagonist from The King's Speech, like, that king, and follows on with his daughter.
Okay. So you watch The King, then The King's Speech, and then The Crown.
That's the canon order.
I'm sure there's a lot between the 15th century and the 19th century that we should probably cover. But
we need to map out a timeline.
That would be a
project.
Yeah. I do not care about the royal family enough to do that.
Yeah, no, but for some reason, I really like The King's Speech. I just really like that movie. I thought it was really good.
I never saw it.
It's really good.
The King.
And funnily enough, Timothée Chalamet does do a very good King's Speech at the end of this movie.
That's true.
That was a moment where I was like, whoa, I would run into that battlefield with you, Timothy.
Even with that bowl cut?
Oh, man. Somehow he makes it look all right.
Yeah.
Imagine normal human trying to pull off that haircut.
Well, I mean, if you look at any painting of Henry V.
Oh, my God. I was about to say this. I was going to say go to the Wikipedia page.
He looks like a...
Can you just put this image up on like on the podcast YouTube video just for like a second? Just this Wikipedia image of just Henry V.
He looks like a schlub.
He looks like the guy who would like conspire against you. Like he looks so weird. Yeah.
He paid for that.
Oh no. There's something really funny, and I think I saw a Hannah Gadsby bit on it about nobles getting their portrait painted and how they chose to get it painted. And I remember even when I was visiting Parliament in Australia, in Canberra, they have like massive portraits of all of our prime ministers throughout history. And I was just looking at them and like there's front on, there's like a slightly different angle. And it's like, and there's the guy who does side profile. And it's like, what's going on? Like, are they just trying to like get like fun, have some fun with it? And then there's one guy.
One with like upside down?
No, but there's one which is like weird pop splash art that was made by like students and it's kind of like really, really weird. And some of them are scary.
Okay, so my new goal is to become prime minister so I can get my portrait as like a manga painting.
Oh, oh fuck. It's like a DeviantArt like OC, like really mediocrely drawn.
Oh yeah, it's kind of character completely made from skills learned from how to draw manga books.
Yes,
from the early 90s.
And you have like a katana, just really like really badly drawn.
President Harry.
Yep.
No, Prime Minister. Why did I say?
Yeah, far out. So yeah, The King.
Good. The King.
Check it out.
Check it out. Yeah, spoiler time.
All right, spoiler time. So, to go more into the story, I'll just do a quick more little...
A more detail. Little
catch up. Because I actually watched this movie at 8 a.m. this morning. I got up to watch it because...
Wait, I thought you watched it last night.
I meant to, but I got home and I was like, all right, guys, we're going to watch The King tonight. And my two housemates were like, oh, no, we're not. We've already planned the movie. They outnumbered me, so I couldn't. They're like, we're watching the 1978 Lord of the Rings animated movie.
What the fuck?
Because they got their hands on a copy. And I was like,
that movie's
you know,
whack.
That whack is the word. It would be fun to do even like a special standalone episode on that movie.
Oh, shit. Let's do it.
Movie, have you actually watched the whole thing?
Yeah, man. When I was a kid.
Oh, my God. It's so weird.
Are you talking about the one that covers like Return of the King as well?
No, it's just the first two. It's a weird the whole production cycle.
Two. Yeah, there's like one that covers like Fellowship and Two Towers, and there's one that's like Return of the King, right?
Yeah, but they got a different team to make it because I think
yeah, and they don't look like they're the same.
They got the team who made a Hobbit movie years before to make.
Yeah, I've seen the Hobbit movie. I saw that as a kid too.
But a different dude made the first two, and it was like, it sounds like the production was like a mess, and the director is like the most vocal dude who won't shut up to this day about anything like Lord of the Rings related, like even the Peter Jackson movies and stuff. It's Seems really weird.
Does he talk smack about the Peter Jackson movies?
He says he had, last I saw, and I was reading up on it last night because I was so interested. He said like he had no feelings. He hadn't seen them. He like, he said he didn't watch them. And he says that he's really angry that none of the producers or the director or any of the people involved like asked for his permission to make a new one. Like he owned the story.
Straight to VHS, dude.
Yeah. Come and on. Like you look at that guy's filmography and like, I'm not trying to talk smack at him, but he doesn't have the best like resume of movies he's made.
Hey, do you want to know what I remembered?
What?
They were talking about King spoiler section.
Yeah, we're supposed to be talking about the King. Anyway, so that's what I watched last night when I meant to watch the King. So I got up this morning to watch the King.
You watched instead Return of the King. I get it.
So I watched the King. I watched the King this morning. So it's pretty fresh in my memory.
Yeah, I watched it a couple weeks ago, so it's less fresh.
I feel like I was going somewhere with this, but anyways. So what happens with the King is he wants nothing to do with the royal family, and then his dad suddenly is like, I'm dying. Somebody needs to take up my mantle. We're going to give it to your younger brother because he actually wants to be king. You don't give a shit, so he can do it. And Timothy Chalamet was like, sure, go for it. But couldn't help but try and help, because the first thing that happens is the king pisses off one of the loyal followers.
And yeah, the who civil then war starts.
Rebels against them, and they send the son to fight him, and the son is like pretty much ready to die. Like he's way too keen to die in battle.
Yeah, can I point out something just quickly? So our good boy Henry V. So he's like, I don't want to be king, whatever. But as soon as his brother becomes king, and then he realizes that his brother's gonna go to a battlefield, he's like, oh, I'm gonna have to step in. Did he, like, for a character that's depicted as very wise and intelligent, he didn't see that outcome coming?
I think he just didn't. I guess he didn't want his brother to die.
Well, I understand that feeling, but it feels very much like, yeah, that's what's going to happen if you don't become king. Your brother's going to fight. Anyway, I don't think
that's
important.
A good point. But yeah. And then shortly, like 2 seconds later, after he manages to save his brother by doing, and I really like how his idea, his the way he would meet with the opposition and say, let's fight one-on-one, and then he wins and nobody has to die. That's such a good little character touch. Like that makes him so much more noble.
And it also makes the filmmakers not need to do a full-scale battle.
Yeah, but in a way that doesn't make you realize that. It just really works. And it makes me think that
really
that sounds like something that he was taught by like the John Falstaff character, even though it's never touched on, but it seems like, yeah. Anyways.
And then so there's the one-on-one duel that we talked about earlier, which
this is really cool,
and, like,
1v1.
Really scrappy. But he really baits that character into it, because that he knows how that character is going to react, being so honorable and young. He knows he's going to accept this duel.
Yeah,
and
but in the end,
that character's just, you know, he comes up and he's like, you know, he doesn't want the small dog, he says he wants the big dog, and he keeps calling it big dog. I thought that was a really cool touch.
Yeah, it's just a really good clash of characters.
Yeah.
So Timothy Chalamet wins. What was his name? He was Hal, is what he goes by.
At the start of the movie, I think he kind of loses that.
He gets I think his name is technically Henry, but there's like three Henrys or something. And
yeah, well, until Henry the Fourth dies.
Yeah. Then he becomes Henry. So young Henry wins the battle, saves his brother, and then 2 seconds later finds out that his brother just went off and died anyway. And he's just like, fucking damn it. And the king then dies of disease or whatever. And now he's the king. And he's just like, God fucking damn it. He's like, you know what, I'm gonna make the best of this.
Yeah, he's like, and if I have to be king, I might as well be the best king.
Yeah, you really get the sense that he's trying to be a genuinely good king.
Yeah.
But then he starts to get caught up in all this drama, like all these people, like all these, like, his followers and all the people of England, and like what he realizes, like how much his position and his decisions impact everything, and all of his followers are trying to pull him in different directions
with their own motives mostly.
Yeah. And then he starts getting goaded by the Prince of France, who sends him like a weird child's toy, like a ball, to like, as clearly like a mockery. And then shortly after that, sends an assassin.
And
this prompts him to go, you know what?
Fuck,
I don't know
France.
If I can ignore this. And then like the next day, he finds two of his council conspiring with France. And he's like, you know what?
Oh, that's right.
I can't ignore this. I have to deal with this. I have to step up, because if I let this go, the people, like England as a country, looks weak.
And they will suffer.
We'll look like a pushover, and mm-hmm. they'll probably turn on me, and like it'll hurt the impact of him as the king and as a ruler, and it'll damage the entire state. So he wages war in France, and he recruits his old buddy, Joel Edgerton from the slums, to come with him as an advisor and as his like only actual friend he can trust. And they travel to France and slowly make their way towards, I actually can't remember where they're going, towards the castle, towards the king, something like that. They land in France and start making their way along France. And yeah. He then comes face to face with the French prince.
After a castle siege, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Which is awesome.
I was like, going to say.
Those siege weapons and everything.
I had that in my notes. That catapult scene, that siege scene, is like stunning.
Yeah, that's really good.
The lighting, the way the fire flings across into the distance, like that is impeccable. Like that was very tight.
Everything that you like visually, even though it doesn't have a lot of action, all of, like the visuals of like medieval combat and the battlefield look so good, man.
Yeah, it has such a good, satisfying like oomph to it when it like crashes into the distance.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, yeah,
that was good, so scene. Good. But yeah, then shortly after that, he meets with the Prince of France, who they refer to as the Dauphin, played by Robert Pattinson, who does a good French accent, I think. I don't actually know my French accents too well, but he sounded good. And he pretty much does the I fart in your general direction scene.
He says, you have big balls, but tiny dick.
Yeah, and he does his whole bit and starts giggling maniacally.
Yeah, so like in this like pretty grounded medieval movie where people are acting like people, in comes Robert Pattinson that acts like a fucking like James Bond villain.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
Ham and just chewing the scenery.
Oh my god, you hate him so much from the moment he sets foot in. The moment he appears, you're like, fuck this guy. This guy's the worst.
And his stupid blonde wig.
And he's just goading him. He's just like insulting him and trying to get him to like, I don't know, show weakness, and keep sending him all these messages and like killing kids and stuff. Like,
so he's like, the final thing is he's like, I'm gonna kill a random kid, an English kid, and then he makes one of the other kids carry the head to the king.
Yeah,
but that head is one of the worst looking heads I've ever seen in a movie.
I didn't really notice.
It looked like a plastic head. It looks very bad.
Well, I didn't notice, but it was still very impactful.
Yeah, it was a good
scene.
And
that scene was well done as well, where the assassins appear. Just the moment those kids were running off, I'm pretty sure I uttered out loud to myself, like home, like upstairs in the living room at like 9:30 a.m. Just, oh, these kids are fucked. Like the moment they just cut to these random kids, I just knew they were dead.
Oh no, Robert Pattinson's on the prowl in the forest.
I'm a fan of Robert Pattinson. I can't wait to see where he goes with his career. And I'm very interested to see his Batman.
Yeah.
He's very good as playing a like unhinged maniac kind of character. He was really good in Good Time, which is a very deranged movie.
He's got a lot of prestige at the moment, which is very interesting considering where he started.
Yeah, I know. And I the same thing has happened to Kristen Stewart. They started in this big trashy blockbuster franchise. They probably made enough money off that now that it's like they can do whatever the hell they want now. And they're both doing just weird stuff. And that's great. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah.
Robert Pattinson is shaping up really well though. And I think he's like, people still haven't quite let him live down Twilight yet, but he deserves like a chance. I'm so excited for The Lighthouse, which isn't out. That's not out in Australia yet. I'm pretty sure they just figured out the release date for it. And it's like early January and came out like months ago in America. And I'm just like in this daily game to try and like avoid spoilers for it. But yeah. And eventually, pretty much, they find themselves back to the king, traveling through France, and they find themselves face to face with the French forces, which are like four times as big as theirs. Yes. And they're just like, oh shit. They have the high ground too. Like, what the fuck are we going to do? We can't.
It's over, Anakin.
Where there's a really good... I really like the scene where Joel Edgerton's character came up with his plan. Because everyone, like all of his, all of Timothy Chalamet's advisors are like, we're fucked. We have to surrender. We have to turn back. We can't beat this. He completely outnumbers us, outgears us, and like out the environment is in their favor. And Joel Edgerton's just like, actually, they're going to get stuck in the mud if we lure them all out. If it rains tonight, we lure them all out. And then we attack them from the flank with people who aren't wearing heavy armor and no horse. They will be defenseless.
Now, I could be wrong. So this is a real battle that happened in history.
Yep.
And I think it went very similarly to what happens in the movie. Which is interesting.
I'm going
to
open the Wikipedia page now. The Battle of Agincourt.
Yes. I'm very certain it's a real event. Whether it happened exactly as it is in the movie, I don't know.
This page is quite dense.
Yeah, it's a pretty famous fight.
All right, so I might have to look this up later. But I'm sure they probably... I'm just going to go off face value and assume that they...
It makes sense to me. Yeah. And just like, this battle is such a brawl in the mud.
Oh, it is filthy. Oh, man. And the English did win. Yeah, so it must have happened.
But like, it really puts you in the shoes of like a fighter in that era. I felt claustrophobic watching it.
Yeah.
And like, how do you tell friend from foe?
Yeah, that's something that has always haunted me in like medieval war scenes. Ever since I was a kid, I'd be like, I could not, like, they all look the same, especially when they're covered in mud.
A friend I was watching it with, it was like, isn't one supposed to wear blue and one supposed to wear red? And I'm like, no, that's just Age of Empires.
But yeah, and the whole thing, how they have to lure them out with a seemingly convincing front line of like heavily armored troops to goad them out. Joel Edgerton's like, I have to be the one to lead it because I pitched this idea. If I didn't, then we'd just be sacrificing a bunch of dudes and it would just, nobody would be able to do it. Like, it wouldn't work if somebody wasn't there and I can't get anybody else to do that because they're dead. Like, it's such a good moment of sacrifice.
It's a good character moment.
That charge when the French clash and you just see him get knocked flying. It's just like, whoa. But then the scramble, and there's that big wide shot of everyone just crammed together, and Joel Edgerton can't even like swing a sword because it's so jammed up. And then they flank from the side and they like whoop them in this like grueling, pretty sure it's a one shot action scene as well.
Is it?
There's a really long take one where it follows Hal or Henry just scrapping through the battlefield. It could be a trick. It could be like trick shots, but it didn't seem like it. It was just like this really long, like several minute take of him just...
What does the archers do as well? Because I remember the archers being very important.
The archers, I think at a certain point, the archers can't do much when everyone's slammed together.
Yeah.
The archers essentially attacked from a distance. Just to pick off numbers, essentially.
Oh, didn't they attack from the forest or something?
Yeah. They did. The flanks, the main forces of the English.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, the flanks hid in the forest and then charged. That's right.
Yeah, and that's how they got them, because they all got stuck in the mud. And
it sounds so funny.
I know, but that would have been such a problem back then.
Oh, yeah, and the heavy plate. And then later, there's like, what's his face? Twilight Man. He comes out and...
Oh, wait, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
But before we get to that, I just want to... Because before this battle as well, in the morning of, Hal goes to him again and does his offer. He does the let's fight, just us two, 1v1. Like, you win, I win, England wins. That kind of deal. And Robert Pattinson's character kind of snaps for the first time. And we see, like, he was so sure that Henry was going to surrender to him. And he didn't. That he has this, like, little meltdown. And it's just like, oh, this son of a bitch. This French prince is just the absolute worst. He's just an entitled, like, noble. And Henry's just like, okay, fine, see ya. And then they beat them in battle. It's just, like, so satisfying to see. But yeah, then there's the bit where after pretty much the English have already won, the Dauphin, the French prince, comes out into the battlefield, full suit of armor, and he's like, all right, Henry, let's do it. Let's do 1v1.
1v1 me, scrub lord.
Which is also like, to do it at that point in the battle, it's just like, you are the worst. You've already lost. And that's pretty much how it reflects in that scene. Because he cannot even walk. He just fumbling around like a Looney Tunes character, like
it's so slipping funny. And sliding. It's like the one like legitimate moment of comedy in this movie. Oh, well, obviously Robert Pattinson's character is like comedic throughout, but like this is like funny as just seeing this like dumbass like trip in the mud.
Top 10 cringe moments in British history.
When the French prince slips in the mud.
Oh, I'm the moment he slipped.
How do you reckon the French think about this movie? Because, like, they don't look good.
Good question. They don't look good. Well, the Dauphin in particular just doesn't look good.
Because, like, obviously, he must be a historical character. I wonder if he's, like, you know, like, in the movie. Because he's, like, a comic book character.
I don't know if he's very beloved. From when I quickly scrolled through the Battle of Agincourt Wikipedia page, I saw this one sentence, which is, King Henry V of England led his troops into battle and participated in hand-to-hand fighting. It's King Charles? Is that him? Oh, wait, no. Okay, well, never mind. I got it mixed up with the actual King Charles, because it says King Charles did not command the French army himself as he suffered a psychotic illness and associated mental incapacity.
Which we do see later in the movie.
Something mustn't have been right in the bloodline.
Too much.
Something must have been a bit
incest, bit funky. Maybe.
Too much of that good old incest. but yeah.
Double dose of incest.
Yeah, and he just slides all over the battlefield and just fucking...
Oh, and then like, Henry's just like, get him, boys, and like, all the guys swarm him. He doesn't even give him the honor of getting, like, killed by the king.
He doesn't deserve it at that point.
No. He's just
like...
get in the mud.
Yeah, there was a moment where I was like, I don't know how I feel about that moment, but then the more I think about it, I'm like, no, he didn't deserve even a chance at a 1v1 with
him.
He
did kill a kid.
He'd already lost and just didn't stand a chance. Like, look at him. Ugh.
Look at him.
The moment he just like slipped over, I like loud, like my housemate walked in and I loudly was just like, oh, you son of a bitch. Like, God fucking this piece of shit. I hated him so much. Like, all this build-up, all this, you know what, like, all this facade and trying to, like, undermine the King of England, and he's just some dumb kid. It doesn't, like, didn't, like... But anyways, so Henry wins, and he proceeds on to meet with the King of England, who surrenders, and he's like, look, my son...
King of France.
...led this. The King of France? Yeah, sorry. Meets with the king, who's this really kind of quiet, humble guy. And he's just like
my talking to himself beforehand?
Yeah. And he's just like, my son.
Doesn't he say something about like he's talking to the birds or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, something's a bit fishy.
He's having a psychotic episode.
He's just not a very stable man.
Oh, yeah, and he's like, but I like to be in my bed or something.
Yeah, he meets with the king and, or the two kings meet, and the king of France is just like, my son led me into this war, my dumbass son. I didn't want anything to do with it. You win. You can have it. Like, the only term of my surrender is that you take my daughter as your wife just to keep the royal line going, I guess. And that's it. And that really parallel, that made me go, oh, in like a dumb like movie way, because it's like, but Timothy Chalamet was only in the war because of his dumb dad. And this guy was only in the war because of his dumb son. They're like not so different. But that was a nice little moment.
I had the same thought.
And then there's the outstanding, like, the ending.
Yes.
Where he meets with the French princess Catherine. He's played by Johnny Depp's daughter.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, she looks exactly like him as well. Yeah, like, look at her now. It's like, oh my God. She has Johnny Depp's face. She did, again, a convincing French accent, as far as I can tell. And she's just like, oh, my dad never did any of that stuff. Like, yeah, he didn't even send the ball. He never even sent the like child's like play ball. Like, he did none of that. And King Henry's just like, excuse me for a moment,
I need to strangle the room. It's
just like, that moment was like, I have to go now. And he just walks out of the scene, which is pretty sure actually what happens. And he's like, and then he goes and talks with one of his counselors there the whole time, the chief of justice, and talks to him about how much land he's now going to inherit now that they own France, and pretty much just realizes that he was just goaded by his own counsel into going to war, into losing his best friend Joel Edgerton's character in a self-sacrifice in that battle, and like all the torment and turmoil he's gone through was all because he just got tricked because of the greed of just a guy who wants more land for sheep. And probably the rest of his, like, probably all of his council. Like, there was even the line by the...
Yeah, the Pope.
The priest
like,
guy.
Yeah.
Who not, was just, like, Pope, assumed like Archbishop. That they were going to go to war. Archbishop, yeah. He had this line where he was like, oh, so when we go to war with France? And Henry's like, wait, what? I never said that. That was my dad's thing. I want nothing to do with that. And he was just like, oh, wink. And it's like, what? And it's just like, oh. And then
that guy's a piece of shit as well. Because, like, he's just, like, you know, getting...
Oh, yeah, he's getting carried the whole time.
Yeah, he's getting literally carried through the whole campaign. Like, and there's no reason for him to be there. Isn't he supposed to be, like, a religious figure? Why is he...
Yeah.
Piece of shit.
He's the worst. They're all the worst. And he... just pops his chief justice, bam, just kills him on the spot with a little dagger stab.
Oh, was it a dagger? I thought he strangled him. Yeah, no, I remember.
No, he just goes bang. He's like kneeling to him after this really powerful speech, being like, peace is made through war. And he has this huge rant about how he's made, like, yeah, forged peace and forged all this loyalty as a great king in history. But it's like, oh, he was just tricked. He was just goaded into doing it all.
Yeah.
Like, none of his followers are actually loyal. They're just greedy. And he's just the most powerful figure.
Mm. Oh, it was a good moment.
Such a Shakespearean ending. Yeah.
It's a good way to end the movie. But what's interesting is Henry dies like 2 years after this in history.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. See, that's like every historical story, though, I find. It's like, and he lived happily ever after, except for when he died of syphilis 60 minutes later. Like,
it's so true. And I would, like, in terms of historical accuracy, while we're on the subject, like, I think Henry being, like, anti-war is, like, very untrue. I think he's the more war-hungry out of him and his dad. And there's no real evidence that they had a strained relationship. So, like, the crux of the movie is very fictional, as far as we can tell.
Yeah. Okay.
Doesn't matter, because it really works as a movie, and it's the strongest bits in it are the fictional stuff.
Yeah, regardless of the historical accuracy, like we said before, it's just a good movie. Yeah, like
exactly.
A
good
Shakespeare, like, kind of period piece. Mm-hmm. I keep trying to call it an epic, but it's not really an epic. It's just
long. It actually seems to happen over, like, a couple weeks. That's sort of the feel you get when you watch the movie, even though I think it happens over, like, a decade in real life.
Yeah, definitely has that feel. Like, I don't know. The sense of time.
Yeah, the sense of time is a bit weird in this one.
Yeah, that's just movies, though.
Yeah, yeah. I think that sense of time actually enhances the movie's pace.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good movie. I don't really have much else more to say about it. I think this is the first movie that we've both just, like, completely agreed on.
True.
Like, it's just a good movie. It is a good movie. I have no real criticism.
I think more people should definitely see it.
Yeah, I agree. I think my biggest criticism is that Netflix has buried it for some reason.
Mm. So,
and that's not anything to do with the movie.
Do you reckon a part of it is because, like, its Rotten Tomatoes score isn't fantastic?
Yeah, it's just looking at it now, it's on 71%. But it really hasn't got that many reviews. Or it has a decent amount.
I think, yeah. Do you reckon part of that is because a lot of people expecting more of a Shakespearean version are disappointed?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I get that feeling. Like, if you're, like, you know, a big-time critic, you might be also interested in, you know, classical plays and stuff like that. And maybe
it
doesn't live up to that.
Yeah, it just seems kind of like what we're saying before. It's like these medieval dramas don't really resonate with pop culture at the moment. Mm.
What's the audience score, actually? Because I think that
the audience score is... Oh, the audience score is 85%.
See,
so people...
Yeah.
People who watched it probably like it.
It's
a good movie. I'm interested to see if this gets any award nominations. Probably won't at all. Probably get nothing.
It did enough of a cinema circuit, as far as I'm aware, to be in the running. It should win. Maybe it didn't go far enough. Maybe a costume nod.
Yeah, maybe it'll get a nod. I don't know. But because it could honestly get nominated for a lot of things.
But also, like, streaming platforms.
Acting, the directing.
Streaming platforms get snubbed.
I think it's just going to get forgotten, which is sad.
Yeah, which is a real shame, because... I reckon
it's good.
Should be a
Makes me happy that we're doing this review on the movie just to kind of get some more word out, because nobody's talking about it.
Yeah, so all 10 viewers can... now watch the
thing. Yeah. And even my housemates, I was like, do you guys want to watch this? And they're like, no. Even I didn't really want to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, I had no desire to watch it.
The only reason I wanted to watch it because of a word of mouth recommendation from work. And she was the only one talking about it.
Yeah, fair point.
So
that's all you need, I guess. So we just need to start telling people it's a good movie.
Yeah, exactly. And people watch it. Like, I'm gonna, next time my mom and dad ask, like, oh, what's good on Netflix? I'll say The King. Go watch The King.
Yeah. I reckon I can trick my brother into watching it. I can say it's a historical period piece and he'll be like, run home.
Maybe soften the blow of it being not historically accurate at all.
Yeah, he'll come back to me the next week after and be like, and have like a spreadsheet. Be like, this is where things got fucked.
At the start. Oh, I didn't touch on my favorite part of this movie. So, if you were to have a drinking game for this movie, there's a couple things you can have. I don't drink nor game. So, but like, one of the categories will have to be whenever a scene starts with someone in bed waking up.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of those.
Fucking happens. All the time. There's so many scenes that just get people getting woken up and told news.
Yeah, I guess that's how it must have been back in those days.
I get it, but like, it became so reoccurring every time the group I was watching with were like, what's going on? Why is everyone just sleeping all the time? I know it's just the show of the passage of time, But like, it just happened so regularly and so consistently that it became like its own trope within its own movie.
Yeah. So I guess to wrap up, it's really good.
Yeah, really good. I think it's go see the
definitely
King.
Worth a watch. What I said before, it's a really well-directed movie. The director did a really good job making such a big story feel so small and intimate. And just, it's outstanding. Something I did think of while I was watching this movie, I was like, I would like to see a movie by this director, David Michaud. I would like to see him do like a Superman movie.
Oh.
I think he's like the right choice for one because so much, this is totally going off on a tangent, but we don't do tangents here. Flashback to us talking about 1978 Lord of the Rings. I'm a big Superman fan, and I find none of the Superman movies have done it well because the fundamental basis of Superman Dilemma, like his good stories are all about him having to figure something out, like a moral or ethical dilemma, like an impossible situation that Superman has to figure out. Those are all the best Superman stories. Not like Superman fights big robot, Superman fights other evil Superman. Like, that's not the point. Like, that's not what the purpose of a good of Superman is. Superman's fundamentally about, like, morally trying to be the Superman, you know?
Yeah.
Not being the strongest man. That's where it's different from, like, Batman and all the other Superman knockoffs that are just like, I have powers and I fight the evil guy. But yeah, we'd like to see something like that. I think he could do a good job.
Why do you think that? Like, what specifically about him?
It's what I was saying before. He's really good at capturing that inner turmoil. Like, you can really see, in this movie, Henry, you can see him thinking of every single piece of information he has, every single course he's trying to like think and decide and do what's best. And he's just going through these impossible circumstances and like trying to figure out the best way out kind of stuff. That's just a little idea I thought. It'd just be interesting to see. It'd be more interesting than like another, I don't know, Zack Snyder, Man of Steel 2 or anything. Yeah. Maybe we'll get that with the success of Joker. We'll get some serious dramatic superhero movies. And that'd be something cool to see. Something like kind of in the tone of like Kingdom Come.
Anyhow,
I feel like I had something else I was going to say, but I can't remember.
Oh, well. Just like remembers this movie, like Netflix.
Oh, why does Netflix keep doing this? There's so many good Netflix originals that nobody else has seen. Like, I'm going to try and just pull up a list real quick. I know we're wrapping up, but I want to pull up a list of good Netflix movies.
So, to summarize, Warner Brothers, if you're listening, get this guy to do your Superman. And Netflix, if you're listening, fucking sort your shit. Promote the good stuff.
Yeah. Apparently, Warner Bros. Were actually supposed to make this movie, The King, in 2013. I was reading the like production history because I was like, why is this movie so good and why is it on Netflix? Like, why isn't this just like a cinema movie? But like, it sounds like Warner Bros. Were going to make 2013 with the same director and with Joel Edgerton, like a writer or something. And then they just didn't do it for like years and years. And then Netflix just got it and Warner Bros. Were just like, oh, whatever. And then it just came out instantly. Like, it got made really quickly. But yeah, Netflix movies. Like, nobody's seen Apostle. That's a really good one. That's from the director of The Raid.
I haven't seen that.
It's a good movie. I wouldn't say it's, like outstanding, but it's a very solid movie. Gareth Evans, the director. It stars Dan Stevens. It's just such a fun movie. Mm-hmm. Very Resident Evil 4.
Okay.
The Night Comes for You, I think, is another one. The Night Comes for Us. It's another Indonesian movie. It's a martial arts movie made by a lot of the same people behind The Raid. Some of the same actors in it, and it's essentially just like a hell yeah Indonesian martial arts movie. It's really good. It's the closest we're going to get to like The Raid 3. not all of my recommendations are Indonesian martial arts movies, but
oops,
there's a lot of good.
That's my whoa, Netflix.
Oh my god, there it is.
It's time. I was adding a fossil to my watch list.
Well, good. It's a good movie. I cannot seem to find a good list. Netflix are doing some pretty interesting stuff. They're also doing a lot of trash.
Yeah.
But then I guess you get The King, which is a good movie.
Mm-hmm. So,
but then you also get Bright.
Okay.
Remember Bright?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Okay. So Bright, piece of shit, right? No one likes it.
Oh, it's so bad. It's awful.
They push Bright more than they pushed
The King. Oh, yeah.
So I...
They got posters.
Well, yeah, it's got posters and like Netflix just sitting there while we're recording, cycling through some of the stuff it's promoting at the moment. One of them being Bright from like fucking like 2 years ago. They're still promoting that shit, but they're not promoting The King. So...
Yep. Bright? When Bright came out, like the week that movie came out, it like Tova Melbourne. Like every single bus stop had a Bright poster on it. Ads were all over the internet. Like, why that one? It was so bad.
Are you looking forward to Bright 2? The Bright?
I am actually. They should call it Brighter. Like Die Hard style should call it Brighter.
Yeah, true.
And then Brightest would be the third one. It's honestly awful. Like it's so bad. There's a really good Lindsay Ellis video on it. It's just breaking down how it's dog shit mythology. Like it's so half baked and like they were pitching it like a legitimate, and like the concept is cool. Oh, it's super racist.
Mm-hmm.
The director seems to have a weird interest in like that Mexican gangster archetype. And it's in like all of his movies.
Hey, do you remember
even Suicide Squad? What?
We were talking about The King and we're wrapping up.
Yeah, now I'm close to talking about Suicide Squad Joker again.
Oh, no. That happens every podcast. God,
I didn't mean to. The path just took me to Bright, which took me to the director, which took me now to Suicide Squad, and now we're back at Jared Leto's Joker.
Damn it.